Welcome to the Roanoke Collaboration Project radio show, where we discuss a Radio IQ news story on Radio Melrose.
Members of the Virginia Senate are debating a bill that would place new restrictions on federal immigration officials, keeping them away from polling places and making sure they have a judicial warrant before they can enter a house, making sure any investigations are conducted by state police, and prohibiting them from using surveillance technology like Face ID. Senator Mark Obenchain is a Republican from Rockingham County who says ICE should have access to the latest technology.
I really seriously question whether we really want to prohibit ICE from engaging in surveillance activities with respect to the wide range of activities that ICE actually does engage in beyond immigration.
He says ICE investigates drug trafficking, human trafficking, child exploitation, financial crimes, money laundering, cybercrime, even antiquities theft. Senate Majority Leader Scott Sorovel says other agencies can handle that.
ICE has been totally and completely out of control, unbound by any kind of law or constitutional restrictions whatsoever. And they need to stay in their lane. And I'm sure the DEA and the FBI are perfectly good at enforcing our drug laws or dealing with human trafficking or looking at money laundering or crime. It would strike me that those kinds of things are outside of ICE's lane.
Members of the Senate are expected to vote later this week. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Okay, today to join our discussion, we have
Jay Foster with the Praxis Way.
I'm William Fralin, a former member of the Virginia House of Delegates.
Catherine Elam, former director of Junior Achievement at Southwest Virginia.
Wayne Strickland, former executive director of the Roanoke Valley Allegheny Regional Commission.
Well, this certainly is a timely topic. We've heard, and I know, Catherine, you have some personal experience with what happened in Minnesota. You might want to tell us about that real quick.
Well, I think more than anything else, the whole world has been watching that whole thing. I know recently that when we think of ICE, we need to be able to restore our community's faith in those who are supposed to monitor and do the job that they were sent to do. And I think our major concern when you look at ICE is that, are they being properly trained? We've heard everything from 4 weeks to, you know, something like 7 months. So what is the actual training? What's that going to do for Virginia? Are they going to be properly trained? Because they're going into places without identifying, the whole issue about masks that are on, the whole thing with pepper spraying people before you really get an answer out of them. So what is the most humane way, I would say, to be able to approach a situation?
So, you know, in a lot of those regulations you're talking about are federal regulations and training requirements, and that is impacting how Virginia apparently wants to interact with that agency. But is it proper to just say we're not going to interact at all, Wayne?
You know, ICE has been in the news a lot over the last, over a year. But ICE has been with us for a long time. I mean, they're in the Obama administration, they're all over. I mean, they've been doing their job and they've been arresting illegal immigrants. It's just lately the way they're doing their job has come into question.
Well, and there's a concept of sanctuary cities. And what I think some of the opponents of the bill would say is when you refuse to cooperate with ICE, then they can no longer know, for example, when somebody that's on it has a detainer order is being released from jail. And so they have to be released and then they have to go find them and get them in public. And the normal operations are not usually accompanied by thousands of protesters. Usually that's not what's going on when they have to do that, and which can escalate that. Having said that, of course, people have the right to protest and have the right to monitor. So it's an interesting question. What do we think? So when I was in the General Assembly, we used to have some people would introduce what we call message bills. These are bills that you're trying to either send a message to the executive branch about what you could or couldn't do if they don't shape up, or they were bills that were taking a contemporary problem and saying, I'm doing something about it, even if what they really were doing is not much. I'm not saying this is a message bill. I do believe it's been in the news so much recently that it was unlikely not to come up in the General Assembly session. But should ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, like you say, Wayne's been in existence for a long time, should they not be notified when somebody with a detainer warrant is released from jail?
Yeah, Jay. Well, to me, this keeps coming back to a question of almost a bait and switch of, you know, again, we've talked a little bit about the what versus the how. So I think if we were all talking about getting rid of the most violent criminals that are here illegally, if that's the what, you get, I think, a wide number of people that would be very supportive of that. The thing we saw in Minneapolis is definitely what I would say is a bait and switch. So going into neighborhoods, going into a Target store, going into, you know, just on the road, pulling somebody over and profiling them, right? That's getting out of the lane of what I think ICE should be doing. And I think that's what Spanberger is trying to pull back and say, not in Virginia.
Right. Of course, ICE is still going to operate in Virginia. Mm-hmm. They're just not going to operate in conjunction with the state police. It's the way I understand this particular bill. Is that safe?
Well, I think back to this point is in the ideal world, obviously there'd be a lot of coordination between local law enforcement and federal resources. I would hope the communities would like to see the federal resources coming in to help address crimes in our communities and make our communities safer. If that was the case, I think we'd all be supportive. But what you said earlier is, like, shouldn't ICE have the right to work with, like, say, someone's getting out of jail and be notified that that immigrant is in our jail system, a violent criminal, come and get him? I would think, of course. So my question is, why is that not happening? But probably because there's a lack of trust. I think that's the key. You know, we can't trust what the federal government's trying to do with this agency that seems to have been taken over with an agenda that a large number of people are not in support of.
Right. Yes, Catherine.
I would go back to that same point that Jay just brought up. It's the fact that cooperation between the different entities needs to be clear as we go places. Every state operates differently. I know we have the federal level, what they have to do. But I remember that it was said in the Minneapolis situation that the Department of Corrections head actually did a video, and he did a news conference to show that ICE was saying that they need these detainees that were coming out of the prison. And they tried to claim that they had to go and search them down. Well, what he showed was a video of them transferring these individuals into the cars that belonged to the ICE department. Mm-hmm. So he was very upset because the things were getting blown out of proportion. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. How do we rebuild trust even amongst the different levels of law enforcement? And I mean, you know, we can think about, if we look at our communities, there's always been a profiling. As there's this traditional thing that we go now on the last probably 20-some years, you can be Black while driving and be pulled over. I mean, these are things that we live with every day in terms of the Afro-American population. So we realize and understand when we see these other individuals being picked up based on just what they look like or their accent. So I think these are the things that we have to work through again, is that there is dignity. People are trying to get to work. They're trying to do their part and not trying to be a part of a problem is necessary. And I think that's the piece that we need to look at, is all the information being transferred from one agency to the other? Are they taking time to work together? I imagine, like most places, I think of even a hospital, you sit down and you look at your day and who's in, what's the census look like, what do you have to do? That should be what's going on with these different agencies, is they're going to work together.
You know, there's two things came to mind when Catherine, when you were talking. One, it's not an issue now, but this, again, when I was in the General Assembly some 15 or 20 years ago, so it's been a minute, primary seatbelt laws were an issue. And the question was, could police pull you over for not wearing a seatbelt? Mm-hmm. It was an interesting coalition of libertarians like me and African-American legislators who were against that. Mm-hmm. Because the idea would be you could get pulled over and the cop would just say, well, I thought you weren't wearing your seatbelt. Right. And there's not a blinker or any, there's no light. It could be. And so that was an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you this. So my understanding is ICE enters into agreements with local law enforcement. Now, it's written agreements. This is what we're going to do. This is what you're going to do. You're going to tell us this. We're going to tell us that. That seems to me to be a productive way to set forth those relationships. And if this bill says you can't do that anymore and you can't cooperate anymore, that seems to me to be, that might not be productive. Does that generate anything, Wayne?
Well, we're talking about trust here. We've mentioned that word several times. And traditionally, and as we said, ICE has been around for years, decades, and they had agreed that they would not go on into schools and they would not go go into these places, and they would pick up the folks at some other point. But now we're seeing in Minneapolis and other places the ICE folks throwing tear gas grenades into schoolyards, looking to pick up or to hold off the protesters, but also maybe looking to pick up some illegal immigrants. But you begin not to trust folks that are doing things like that, particularly when your kids are involved.
Is there an issue between ICE doing its job and detaining suspected illegal immigrants versus crowd control in a protest? It seems to me those are two different things, and it's pretty clear ICE is not good at crowd control during a protest. But they would say that's because we didn't have cooperation. The local people were not there to help us. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they would say, yes.
You know, I think this goes back to the essence of, I had this debate with one of my friends recently. I don't see people in Minneapolis necessarily protesting ICE as enforcing immigration. I see them protesting a violation of our constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. And a violation of our constitutional contract, our social contract. And if I would say, bring it home to Roanoke, Virginia, if I saw that happening in my community, I would feel obligated to take a stance to say, you're not going to do that in Roanoke, Virginia. It's just, it violates our constitutional rights. And I don't think that's right.
What's the constitutional right that's violated?
Well, actually, back to Michael Pope's segment, mm-hmm. I think what Spanberger said is that you have to have a warrant. So there's a big constitutional right. And there's all kinds of due process, and you're a lawyer, so you ought to help me understand that.
I'm a former lawyer. I don't practice, and I believe there's a difference. So there's judicial warrants and there are administrative warrants. What ICE is saying is that federal law, and remember, this is federal law that's been in place, as Wayne talked about, for a long time, allows them to issue administrative warrants to search for illegal immigrants in whatever, like a house or whatever. They have to go, but it's not by the third party, what they call Section 3 judges, like constitutional federal judges or magistrates. It's the administration itself, but it's some third party supposedly neutral that says, okay, well, I think that's okay. You need to go. I'll give you permission to do that. What ICE, I think, would probably argue is for them to go get judicial warrants in every one of these situations is going to really impact their effectiveness. Now, that may be a trade-off that's worth it, right?
Yeah.
And I also think it's pretty clear that even non-U.S. citizens have constitutional rights in Fourth Amendment rights against search and seizure. So there's a question of how that's balanced.
Right. And the issue of due process is always important. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that you just can't throw somebody in jail. You have to allow them to talk with their lawyer. You have to allow them the right to fight the issue in court before a magistrate or somebody. Right now, we're seeing people just thrown in jail.
Yeah, or picked up off the street by masked people without identification, showing that they're actually part of ICE, and unmarked vehicles. And this is outside of Minneapolis. That one student, I think, that was up in, was it New Hampshire, Connecticut, somewhere up, she was on the street. She had put an editorial in the newspaper, and ICE, I'd say, abducted her, took her and deported her to Louisiana, was going to take her out of the country. There's the other guy that actually got taken all the way and sent to an El Salvadorian prison, all right? So this to me, is fundamental violations of the Constitution.
Right, and I think I need to reset us here. You're listening to the Roanoke Collaboration Project radio show, where we discuss radio IQ news stories on Radio Melrose. Wayne?
I was just going to say that, you know, no one thinks that we should do well. There may be people who think we should do away with ICE. I think, as Jay has said earlier, most people agree if you're in this country illegally, you really shouldn't be here, and that there's a right to pick you up and have due process, so, and then deport you if necessary. But that doesn't seem to be working. I mean, in Minneapolis, they had 10 times the number of police. I mean, more, the ICE people were 10 times larger than the police force. And you wonder, why do you need that if the police should do their job, and that job, one of those, should be crowd control?
Right.
But I mean, but you can't just do away with some the people who do the enforcement, who actually pick up illegal immigrants, and particularly those that are violent or have committed
So I think it might be relevant to our listeners to talk a little bit about this profiling issue mm-hmm. some more, because I suspect that you know, people are subject to profiling. There's no question about it. And one of the things that I think happens in these ICE situations is I have an order to pick up Wayne because I know Wayne is an illegal alien. And maybe he's some sort of criminal, whatever. Aside from the fact of whether he would qualify as the worst of the worst or whatever, I've got an order to go pick him up. I go to pick him up, and I run into Catherine. And Catherine says, and I realize, I say, well, Catherine, are you a citizen? Mm-hmm. Which is a question I can ask. That's not necessarily profiling, right? Although maybe if I don't ask the other people. But so I ask Catherine, and she says, no. Well, am I, as a law enforcement officer, supposed to just go, okay, well, I'm not going to pick you up because I'm not here to pick you up? I mean, that's a question. Yeah.
Well, Jay. I always try to zoom out a little bit. We've talked about this concept several times in this group about the need for immigration, the need for workers, and how critically important they are to our economy. So it's an interesting question in my mind of whatever happened to spending some resources and money to process or expedite the processing of people who are trying to come to this country legally. I've heard horror stories about ICE picking people up in, like, they're going into the court systems and finding people who are trying to work on their paperwork, who've been trying for years to do the right thing, and they're in the middle of doing that, and ICE deports them. It's like, what is going on here? So, again, it sounds to me like this is a mass deportation focus, which I don't think a lot of people would have said that's what I was voting for, when the pitch was, we're going to go after the worst of the worst. And if that's the case, then we're back to the question of, like, why doesn't local jail systems say, hey, I've got an illegal immigrant here that raped somebody, come and get him. Right. Everybody would say, sure, do that. Mm-hmm. But they're doing a lot more than that. And that's the problem.
Catherine?
And I think when you go back to that whole thing about being in the process, that's one thing that was witnessed before, too. A lot of people were being picked up and never having the opportunity to show their ID or show what they had on them for paperwork. And they were always telling everybody to carry those things with you when you go out. And that's what it's come down to in these cities, that when you know ICE is coming, that you better not be out there without your proper ID on you. And that's probably a fear that never had before. Maybe you always have your driver's license, but if you are a person who is applying for citizenship and they don't, and they're in the process of this, what do they have to be able to produce before they're shipped off somewhere? And I question, based on the whole Minneapolis thing, how is it that they could send people less than 24 hours to Texas or wherever it may be, and oops, we made a mistake, and then they bring them back? So where's all that funding coming from, and how are they being focused? And that happened more than once since January, that, you know, somebody got taken away and they shouldn't have been that person. So again, it's allowing the local law enforcement to be able to be available and see and try to protect those who are out there protesting. We talked about the difference. I think that's where you come in. They got passionate about it. I mean, those protesters have created a system that nobody else had before, and that's, they're feeding people. They're trying to protect their kids as they go to school. There's all kinds of things that have come about with that, walking people to school, walking them and driving them to work. One of the gentlemen I heard interviewed was, he was in a car with a lady who wanted to go to work. She left her phone on the whole time they're in the car to be able to tell somebody, I'm now leaving here. I'm at this intersection. I'm at this one, until she finally got to work, so that if she didn't show up at work, her boss would know where she is. So there's a whole new style out of this. But the protesters, they're the ones who have come up with a system to protect their neighborhoods and their kids.
So yeah, it's an interesting question, Catherine, because there's a line between impeding law enforcement, which is illegal,
yes,
in America, or protecting people. So and sometimes that's interesting. I was thinking when you were talking about the network that's been set up to help, I guess, undocumented immigrants. ICE would say the reason for the masks is because they're being doxxed, because groups are taking their picture, finding out where they live, publishing their addresses as a form of protest to say, here's the people that are doing this, and that's causing them to need to conceal their identity. I don't know the accuracy of that, but that's what they would say. Wayne?
I wondered, we have tens of thousands, 100,000 police in our country, and rarely, if ever, do you see them wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And they go after the worst of the worst, and they are involved in domestic disputes, all kinds of things, but they don't feel compelled to wear a mask.
Well, I think they would say they're not subject to this kind of intense scrutiny from adversarial groups.
Yeah, Jack. And I would say there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. And that should be a big flag to anybody paying attention. I don't think the American people are stupid. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I really do think, and I'll just say it, this administration must think we're stupid, mm-hmm. right? Because if you do something wrong, like beat somebody up or push a woman on the ground who doesn't do anything, wasn't doing anything wrong, maybe blowing a whistle, doing exercising her First Amendment rights, that's a direct, I'd say, violation of our constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. And if a police officer did that, I would certainly hope they'd be held accountable to sure. the fullest extent.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I want to see a badge number. I want to know who they are. And B, as Catherine said earlier, treat people with dignity mm-hmm. as the first default. ICE seems to be treating people as if they're trained to be thugs. And that is not what made America great. That's in my opinion.
Right. Catherine?
Comes off pretty much like a militia going through our communities and doing this damage. And, you know, so often we are speculating that a lot of these people have been that are part of the ICE program. When you think you're going around the country offering $50,000 to join our outfit, again, it's skeptical as to whether they're getting the proper training for that. And a lot of what's happened and has kind of become apparent in a few things. Some of these people are those who were released from the insurrection in January 6th in D.C. that had a place to go. This is a time for them to get a job and way to be hired to do things. But are we doing the proper thing with the hiring and screening of those individuals? Because most of the forces, law forces in our country, you have to go through some kind of screening, physical conditioning, all those things. And if this is just going wham, 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 and you're picking up people, again, it questions what the validity has been sure. in their hiring practices, too, with ICE.
I think somebody on, again, I feel like I'm, want to do a disclaimer here. Everything I'm saying, I don't agree with. I'm just telling what I think, what I hear on both sides of this thing. I think most people would say it was pretty clear Donald Trump was going to have a different enforcement policy from President Biden. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty clear he was going to come after folks that are in the country illegally or without documentation. Now, they were going to start with the worst of the worst. And whether that's the case, I don't know. It sounds like they've gone a little bit more than that. But let me ask you a question, because it's the ICE people. These ICE people, they're wearing masks and they're doing badges and they're not. What about the guy that's worked for ICE for 15 years that has a family in Houston, Texas, that was asked to go to a surge in Minneapolis? And they do this in different places where they go and concentrate forces so they can sort of get the worst of the worst that they're trying to get. And he goes up there, or she, and is faced with protesters trying to execute their job. And next thing you know, where their kids go to school is on the internet. And his house is a picture of his house on the internet. How do we think about that?
Did this person shove a woman onto the ground?
I'm making this person up, but let's say no.
Yeah.
Would you then understand why that person might want to wear a mask?
Well, I would be, if it was me, I would question, do I really want to work for an agency that's doing things that are causing this many people to show up in the streets and getting upset? Because clearly they're doing things that are crossing the line. So to me, I mean, it's a hypothetical for sure.
Sure.
So to dock somebody who did nothing wrong, a good police officer, thank God we have law enforcement, you know, mm-hmm. I deeply appreciate law enforcement and what they do. Mm-hmm. If they do that with dignity to other people and someone doxes them, I'd be the first one to try to protect them. They shouldn't do that. But some people should be held accountable. The scene with Alex Pretty, that guy who basically shoved the woman on the ground and then hit Alex Pretty in the head, that guy should be held accountable.
Mm-hmm. What about the five other people that were there that didn't do that?
Well, it's an interesting question of the people that were basically aggressively going after the protesters, and I've seen ICE agents that seem like they're doing their job professionally. Obviously, that I'd respect someone doing their job respectfully. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
Is there a role? I'm trying to bring this back to Roanoke. We've got a situation where we've got federal immigration laws. Whether you like the law or don't like the law, the law is pretty clear. You can't come here without a visa or without claiming that you are here by reason of asylum. We had expansion of asylum under the former administration where you could basically just go on an app and say, I'm claiming asylum, which overwhelmed the system. And so now we've got a lot of people here that are claiming asylum. Having said that, they're here legally. They're not here illegally. Do we see a lot of that? I mean, I kind of wish we had somebody here that had more experience in this area, but my understanding is this fear has spread amongst people with visas, all kinds of people that really are here, to Jay's point, that are trying to do it the right way. Is that fear necessary part of the process? I guess what I'm trying to say is, how do we get a million people to leave they're here without permission?
Well, couldn't we say, how do we get a million good people that actually are contributing to our economy and doing the right thing, law-abiding citizens, people that are wanting to be here? How do we set up? I've always thought, all the federal buildings, we have the POF building here.
Yeah.
We have resources here. Can't we slice a little bit of that DHS funding off and say, let's accelerate some of the processing that we need to keep these good people in our country who are actually trying to do the right thing?
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be for that. But that's a political solution. That's, your government can do that if they want to. And they haven't.
I know.
So, but the law hasn't changed, for better or for worse, in years about all these immigration issues. So, Catherine?
So can we trust the numbers of how many people are here, you know, that are undocumented?
I mean, I made that's up a thing million. I will confess, no. I made up a million.
No, but I mean, again, what I look at is that, you know, we are taking a hit to our country by the fact that we have some of these individuals who came here on visas, the right thing, that wanted to study at our universities, help us make differences in medicine and other things. And there is a group out there that's starting to think, I don't want to go to the U.S. You know, this, we've turned our whole image around in terms of this being a great place to be and live. And think about Virginia. We've had a great opportunity to have, you know, the different colleges for medicine and other things. And I'm wondering if they're starting to have a hit where they are not going to have others that would apply to come to this country to be able to participate in a system that can make a difference. And I think particularly research and medicine is one of those. And just in general, not being able to have a free train of thought at these universities and other places, that's the piece that I think is scary. We're going to be one mind. I mean, that's what I feel like it's trying to be documented for all of the rest of us.
What is there, you know, there's a disparate impact between, you know, your doctor who gets a visa from India and comes and has a practice, and there's a versus a somebody that doesn't have much resources. They're going to land probably in a city, probably in a low income neighborhood, probably use services. Is there a tension there that we need to deal with?
Again, you have children who are not going to school, and a lot of people want to go other places. So I think it's going to impact families that have had to struggle to get here and live in this our community. Right. So again, I think it's about who can be available with their resources to help assure these families that they can make that transition. And there will be an impact, I'm sure, as time goes on. We're complaining, I saw recently, where our population's going down because we don't have as many births here. A lot of deaths, but not as many births to equal out. So the valley itself is going to feel an impact after a while, no matter what is going on.
And in that same article, it said immigration is what's keeping us even in the population game. Well, that's going to have to be the end of it for today. I want to thank you all for vibrant discussion. And if you'd like to learn more about the Roanoke Collaboration Project, please visit our roanokecollaboration.org as our website. And you've been listening to the Roanoke Collaboration Project radio show, where we discuss a Radio IQ news story on Radio Melrose.